Guten Morgen. Ich bin Willy Morgan und dies erst 42 Minuten. Ihnen Produktion von ThinkBook Radio und thethinkbook.com. Einen wurschtlich Besprechung mit der interessante Künstler und Denker von unser Jets. Hello, welcome to 42 Minutes. You can find us at 42minutes.com and you can reach us by sending us a message to mail at 42minutes.com.
Wait, why don't we halt for a moment and do a quick stop and chat?
Morgen, und dies erst 42 Minuten.
42 Minuten, eine Produktion von ThinkBook Radio.
Radio.
So how are you doing today, Will, on this 22nd day of April showers brings May flowers for episode number 133?
And we both met a friend.
No, you're supposed to answer that. This is a question.
I'm doing good, buddy.
And then, so we both met a friend of 42 Minutes this past weekend. What was your experience like? What am I talking about?
Oh, you're talking about Drew from Circle Takes the Square.
Was that pretty tight for you?
that was an interesting event. It was a great experience to meet him. I mean, he was the only third sync head that I'd met.
And he's definitely a sync head. That's for sure.
He's definitely a sync head. That's the best way to talk to him as a sync head.
Yeah. And so
down to brass tacks and let it go.
Yeah. What our listeners, what we're talking about is, so one of the people we interviewed for episode number 114, Drew Speziale, was on tour with his rock band, and they played Denver, and then 2 days later they played Boise, and so he hung out with both Will and I a couple days apart. Will and I have never met either, so that's what's...
Right, so it was kind of interesting because he just went right through us both, but I mean, how was your experience?
It was so much fun because he was, you know, he said, well, I've been in a van all day, let's just walk around, and so we were walking around downtown Boise. Of course, we bump into my wife. I make him hold the baby because that's what I do when a synchronist comes to my town. I
here, hold this.
And then I take their picture. I did that to Joe Alexander also. But it was cool, you know. It's the sun was shining, and it was just a full-on sync conversation, like a sync 101 conversation, like as far as the history of sync, but then also, you know, just bringing it all together. So it was cool.
You had the experience of watching him play, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you saw the transformation, right?
That was wild because he's like this nice hippie guy, and then all of a sudden he looks like Danzig up on stage a little bit.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
He's going to be in Santa Cruz, and so Joe and David, you need to hang out with him. You'll love him. So I suggest you guys do.
Well, let's not be rude. Let's get back to where we're going.
I need to talk to our listeners about social media. Currently, much of our day-to-day information is transmitted via Facebook, but recent policy changes there are making it more difficult for you, our listeners, to get the information that we're giving to you. And so, you know, we're suggesting that you follow our Twitter accounts at Sync42 and at SyncBook. You know, we'll likely begin utilizing those more in the future. And check out our YouTube channel also. But what we're recommending right now is for you to stay in the loop on Facebook is to, when you're on our Facebook page, under the like button, click get notifications, and you will see all the content we're promoting every day, free from the Facebook algorithms. You'll be notified every time about every new detail. And normally everything that we're saying on SyncBook is really cool. So with that in mind, you should check out the Olympia Sync Summit event on Facebook because this will be the central node with keeping up with all the new developments, as well as our website link, thesyncbook.com/Ole2014. Be sure to check out the Indiegogo and throw us a couple bucks because we need this event funded. It's awesome. Or go there and buy your tickets now. This is such a huge initiation, a sync event of unprecedented size. I mean, so Will and I had these, you know, these moments that are buzzy, but like the density of this thing is going to, you know, the idea of being in a room with that many people, it's going to be epic, and you don't want to miss this.
Well, there seems to be some kind of, I mean, there's a definite charging going on before this. I think even our little experiences with Drew had something to do with it. But
yeah, exactly. Finally, the beauty of podcasting is that you can subscribe to the content and have it downloaded to your devices automatically. We suggest you do this. We don't want you to have to work for 42 minutes. Just subscribe to it. It's there. This is how I do it. And when I'm in the mood to listen to Always Record, the newest episode is there for me. When I want to listen to the newest Middle Chamber, it's there. Or I also listen to Bookworm or some of those NPR shows too. So do that. And we'll appreciate it for you, and you'll appreciate it as well. But anyway, what do we have in store today for 42 minutes, Mr. William Morgan?
Well, we are traveling to Germany to look at the Sync book with fresh eyes. Today, still in line with National Poetry Month, we're speaking with the translator who...
That's a German word.
I know.
Übersetzt
the entire Sync book into German, creating Das Sync Buch. Leah Metzler. Did I say that correct?
Yes, you did.
of whom we know very little. We are very interested in what she thought about becoming intimate with this material. So welcome. Thanks for being here, Leah.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
So you're in Germany.
Beautiful Germany.
Yes. And tell us, what is your normal job? Are you in publishing or are you a wordsmith of some kind?
Well, actually, no. My latest job is working for Harley Davidson, where I do some, international sales, and also we do a lot of custom stuff. So produce own fenders, grips, stuff like that, and I'm responsible for sale. So yeah, actually that's what I do at the moment. Before that, I just went to school and did the studies of translation. So yeah, that's actually what I did so far. Yeah.
So did you say that you have like an educational background in translation?
Yes, of course, yeah. It was a special school for translators and interpreters, and it was a three-year educational way to become a translator, like a traineeship, something like this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's very different because the educational system in Germany is so different to the American one that it's hardly... It doesn't make any sense trying to explain to you because it's just different.
Yeah.
Just go to school, you go to university, but you can also do like dual education. So you go to school and you go to work, stuff like this.
Oh, interesting. But so are you friends with the Nexus of Sync?
Yes. Yeah, we live in the same town, or we like from the same area. And we met a few years ago, and whenever we met, it's like super cool, like talking a lot. And yeah, especially in the past 2 years when he just came to me and asked me if I would translate the book. It's a lot about those, you know, these topics, the sync topics.
That sync stuff.
And
yeah.
In Germany, sync, how does one say that?
Come again?
What is synchronicity in German?
I couldn't find any translation because synchronicity is not that established. We have synchronicität, but all those sync stuff, this abbreviations, I just took it over into German, just made it sync, the same as it is in American. Yeah. There were kind of very, like, many difficulties translating the book, especially with these... you know, the guy, I just forgot his name, the guy that was doing a lot with words.
Oh, that's a lot of them.
The
Kyle.
Rainbow.
Which one?
Kyle.
With the rainbow alphabet.
Okay.
That
so
guy.
This was the hardest part ever to translate because you can't translate it. That's the reason why it was so hard.
Got it.
So you always had to do it in English, explain it in German, or the other way around. Because,
I would have thought that maybe Steve Wilner's piece was hard also. It seemed like...
Yeah.
His is so poetic.
Mm.
All right. So what kind of undertaking was this? How long did it take you?
And first off, was this like the first thing that you had ever translated for a project? Outside of school, was this the first thing that you tackled?
Not really, but I never had such a big project, you know. I had a few smaller things, like, you know, doing some tags for web pages or something, but that's not a big deal, you know? Mm-hmm. Like translating about, I don't know, maybe half a page or something, it's not that difficult. But a whole book, it really was, that really was hard. It really was tackling, yeah.
How long did it take?
It take a bit, all in all, I have to admit, it took about 1 year, but 1.5 years. But because I was working at that time, and so I had a little time translating the book, but then I finished that work, and then it took me another 2 months to translate it. But really, like, getting up in the morning and, starting translation and finish it in the evening, so really the whole day, another 2 months.
Wow. Yeah, that's got to be intense. Now... Yeah. What was your favorite part of the book? You already said Kyle Hunt was next to impossible. What was almost easy for you? Or most interesting, rather?
There wasn't really anything that was easy because I never had to do anything with those sync stuff, you know? Never had to do anything with those.
So you don't have any
music stuff
background in synchronicity or any of those esoteric topics, and so this was like a crash course?
Yeah, I really had to look up a whole lot of stuff.
Oh my.
Every part, every block took me about 1 day in total to just search for words, you know? Especially the girl that made all this yoga stuff.
Ah.
I think that's Peg Carter. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Peg Carter. All those Indian mythology stuff, I had no idea. All this chakra stuff, I had no idea. I had no fucking clue what they were talking about. I would sit there and just going to Wikipedia and searching for explanations, and then I didn't understand the explanation of the word, so I had to look up another explanation for the words that explained to me the word actually searching for. So it was, like, sometimes I was really, like, I don't know. Sometimes
tonight
I've got to get drunk because I can't stand this anymore.
Well, that's so funny because, like, this was your initiation into this world, and it was not gentle. You just, like, had to dive in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you think we're all totally nuts? And you were so glad to be done, or was some of it interesting and you're beginning to see the world differently now?
Well, it's not that I had a total change, but it's not that I think that you guys are all crazy. I mean, you guys are a bit crazy.
Yes.
Crazy. Not that I think you're nuts, you know? Except one guy, but I don't want to mention any names because I don't know if they would track me down on Facebook or something.
You might. You never know with this bunch.
I just say Mercury.
He's a good guy. He's
I believe that. Yeah. I think he's a very nice guy, but when I was translating this and he was like, I'm Mercury and I am Aleister Crowley's whatever, I was like, what are you talking about, you know? So, yeah.
He's talking about the embodiment of an archetype.
I know, but it was just...
It was too much.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite? Like, something that is like, oh, that was a wonderful essay, and it was fun to translate? Anything like that, or was it all just... kind of work?
No, it really depended. I really liked everything that had to do with the zodiac signs. I like that. It's more like, it's not that I had one favorite author. It's just I had favorite topics of different authors. I really liked Sybil Hunter. I thought that the way she described, I was very glad that she was the first, the first pages, because I think she explained it the way so everyone that doesn't have to do anything with synchronicity just gets into it, you know? It's very easily explained. It's just, well, you could say it's synchronicity. Some people would say it's just, she was just tired of her life, and then she woke up and she said, I have to do something else. I have to change something. You know, something which is, like, very easy for people to grab, you know, if they don't have anything to do with synchronicity. So,
yeah. It's introductory, isn't it?
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah. Especially if you don't have anything to do with it.
Did you translate it chronologically, or?
Yeah, part-wise. Well, I started, of course, chronologically, but, for example, I did Mercury, I did it at the end.
Because it was,
I started translating it, and then I thought, oh my god, no, I need something else. And or sometimes it was just that, I was reading, like, through it, you know, not intensely, but just to see what it is. And then I decided, okay, I just make the comics first, and then I make this, or where a lot of pictures in it, so it's less words to translate, you know, so, yeah. Yeah.
What about the poems in there? So that's one of the curiosities to me, is so translation is an art, and translating prose is difficult. You want it to read well, but you need to convey what the thing is saying. Also, with poetry, that it's trickier because you have to kind of play a little bit more by their rules to translate the emotion of the thing that they're conveying also.
But I think what normally it's, if you are a translator, then you really have to translate everything like it's there, you know, like word most of the times. But especially when it comes to poetry, I think you really have to get a bit of distance to the text, because it's not possible to, I mean, you could translate it exactly the way it is written, but then it wouldn't make any sense in German, for example. But I think that's a problem in every language. So whenever you stick too much to the original text, to the original words, you get a lot of problems. But the more you get distance to it, but still stick to the sense, to the message that's behind it, and the atmosphere and stuff, it's okay. But of course, it's absolutely hard to translate poems.
Yeah.
Sometimes even kind of impossible, you know?
When do you read Faust in the German educational system?
I quit school before I had to read that.
Because, so I was a German major, and one of the things I realized is there is so many translations of Faust.
Yeah.
And some are way, way better than others.
That's right. That's the same with Shakespeare. I just read Shakespeare now and then in English, and of course I had to read in school, of course.
Right.
But there's how many differences. But yeah, like I said before, sometimes it's just impossible to translate something.
But wasn't there a famous translator though that translated Shakespeare and made it really popular?
No, not really. Normally you don't. Well, when you read books in Germany, I don't know how it is in America, but you just, if you buy a book, there's just written on it, William Shakespeare, for example, Romeo and Juliet, that's it. And then when you skip through the pages, like at the end, somewhere on the right side of the bottom, there's written, translated by I don't know who, you know? Mm-hmm. So you don't really know who translated the books. And I think most people are not interested in knowing it. I didn't used to look it up either, so yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I definitely have favorite translators when I'm looking at German texts into English, just because they do such a nice job of creating readable English prose. But it's funny because, like, I have the German Sync book open here. You know, it's like, I wonder what it would be like to read myself. I mean, I know how I would compose it in German.
So you studied German, is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
I need to find...
So you can speak German fluently?
No, your English is so much better than my... I have very, very bad passable German, I bet, is what I would say.
Okay.
So I could... So, Will, it was fun to listen to him read the introduction.
Oh, just as fun as it was for me to say it, Doug.
You did a good job, Will.
I think so, yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Leah.
Let's see. I'm looking. I'm scrolling through this to see if I can find my piece, or even Will's piece.
You mean in German?
In German.
Well, I don't know how much you changed, so yeah, or even how much Nexus changed. I don't really know. I couldn't yet get through the new version. So
it was a definite team effort then.
Well, I just translated into German, and then I gave it to Nexus, and he was skipping over, reading over it, and of course corrected a lot of stuff, because sometimes you don't see your mistakes, of course, because you start translating and think, okay, I make it like this, and as soon as you write, you think, oh no, it would be better like this, and then of course the prepositions doesn't fit, or the time doesn't fit, or whatever. And you read through it, but in your head it makes sense, so you don't see the mistakes, you know? So that's why it's very important that people look over it again, you know?
In den Höhen Ästen des einen Baumes saß eine königliche golden Adler. Diese wurde von einer Schlange in den Wurzeln angelt. See, that's the problem with my German, is that I have such a small vocabulary. Und verspottet. Dieser Ort war jeder Ort. Oh, this is beautiful here. Dieser Ort war jeder Ort und kein Ort. War die Senka. What is Senka?
Senka? Could you spell it?
S-E-N-K-E.
Ah, die Senka.
Die Senka.
Uh-huh.
In der Sicht die Zeit und das Unendliche trafen, wo alles und nichts zusammenkamen. This place was every place and no place. It was the...
Die Senke.
Like,
die Senke.
The center?
It's like in between mountains, you know? A valley or something. So when it goes down, goes up again, you know?
It was the place, it was an unending place. It was the place, das Unendliche trafen, wo alles und nichts zusammenkommen, where everything and nothing came together.
Yeah, unendlich is, oh my god. The thing is, I forgot so many easy words. And just learn so much difficult words that no one ever needs, you know?
Der neue Tag begann mit einer roten, aufsteigenden Sonne.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Trotzdem war eine lange Nacht. So, you're right. This is bad radio, but it's interesting because... I wrote that. And I'm trying it. I have to, like, go. It's like reverse engineering what the heck I was saying.
I think that's the whole idea of language, isn't it? I mean, this is like some very William S. Burroughs type stuff where you only have a handful of words to grab out of. Do you know what I mean? And you have to choose and make decisions. One of my favorite things is the I Ching, or not the I Ching, but the Tao Te Ching, which is Taoism from China, like 800 years before Christ or something crazy like that. And there's literally hundreds of translations, and they're all different. And I'm sure that, you know, I think that that's what's wrong with the world as far as like a religion and stuff goes. I mean, the Bible is based off of, you know, it's one translation.
Well, that's interesting, Will, because I think there was a translation that Jung used that was poetic and beautiful, but not a very good translation of one of those Eastern works. And so it still is valid on some level because he found truth and meaning in it.
Right.
But if you wanted the truth and the meaning of the author's intention, perhaps, you need...
Certain things can't... you can change the ideas and stuff, but the certain feel seems to translate easily. Like a special book like the Tao Te Ching, like we were just saying. I've got a ton of different translation because even though they're all different, they're all valuable in their own little way. And somehow that has to do with what the source material was. Do you get what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm probably also on what did the translator think of it, you know? I mean, you can't prevent your own feelings or meanings to go somehow into the translations. And I think that you will always notice that because if you, like me in the beginning, are so confused or so, I don't know, of the text, you know, you have to translate, then at some point it's just impossible for you to have, you know, to not have a meaning about it, to not have kind of prejudice maybe.
Yes.
And you will probably always notice that because it's impossible to don't have, a certain feeling or something about something, especially if you translate, you have a lot of work to do, of course, so it's impossible to not think about it in a certain way.
Douglas, weren't we talking about recently about how language is somehow telepathy? Just with little clicks and pops and sounds and
with grunts,
right? Could you explain that
Ezra.
Same thread and see what? Yeah, but I wonder what. I mean, you would explain it better, but I wonder how Leia would think of that concept.
The concept is that we're more connected than we realize, and so there's this unconscious level of knowing, but then we use crude tools to try and express that, you know. And the crude tools are our voices and language, even though on some level we're understanding each other better than we realize. And so as a translator, that idea is interesting, where what you're saying is that it's hard to take yourself out of the equation because you are also interfacing with the material.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and I've read, I think, some of the famous biblical stories were actually not part of the original text and put in by copyists or translators and things. Like, they're making notes in the margin, and later on those notes by translators and copyists become part of the thing.
Actually, this also has been a little problem for me because there were so many quotes from books, and I just bought the books in German, but sometimes it didn't matter how many times I read the fucking book, I couldn't find, you know, that quote. So normally if you have a book, or like for example some Bible parts, like I think I can remember a part of the Bible where somebody said something about unicorns. And I mean, I had the Bible next to me, but I couldn't find it in the Bible. So I was like, what the hell are you talking about, you know?
I feel for you. I really must say.
No, it's okay. I mean, it was, of course, it was funny because everybody asked me, so what are you doing now? And I'm like, okay, I'm translating at the moment. So what are you translating? Okay, the sync book. It's about synchronicity.
And that's what you, if you boil it down, what is the sync book about, you say?
Yeah, well, of course it is about synchronicity, but I think in this book, synchronicity is interpreted so differently from each author. Every author has a different kind of view and another point of view. You know, everybody just started to actually think about it or become aware of synchronicity from a different, situation. Some people were like devastated or depressed. Other ones were just searching the internet for information and just stumbled over it. So I think it's very hard to begin, to explain what it is. I always quote the example of Carl Jung with the beetle that comes into his room when the girl was talking about this beetle. Mm-hmm. You know, the scarabaeus, I think it is.
Well, what about you, as you're translating and you're reading these essays over and over again? Did you have bleed through? Did synchronicities from the page come into your life, or did you start noticing synchronicities, or do you have any themes develop that all of a sudden, oh my God, there's another 42?
Yeah, did you catch the bug, in other words?
There you go.
Yeah, I started to watch more closely, you know? Like when anything happens, then you can maybe connected to another occasion or something, of course. I wouldn't like have my own blog or something because I'm not so into that, you know, because I don't know. I think I don't have the time. I don't know. No, but I actually had one very funny story that immediately came to my mind when I was starting translating, because when I was studying, I had a small room in a student's dorm, and I was watching Batman, The Dark Knight, and I had my windows open. And guess what? All of a sudden, there was a bat in my room flying around. When I was watching Batman. So
wow.
Stuff like this, you know, it's just, and then you just sit there and you think, what the hell is going on, you know?
Right.
So, of course, sometimes it's just so funny because you're aware. I am aware because I translated it. And then some things happen and you're just like, wow, this is so funny, you know? Or this is so synchronicity. Yeah.
It seems like one of the themes often explored is this idea that did you make that bat come into the room with your thoughts? Like, did you manifest the bat? Or is there a destiny?
Like the bat was already predestined to show up in your room? It was timed?
These things are tied together somehow with you? I'm wondering, you know, how you think about those things now. Like fate and or the idea of you having an active role in creating the reality that you're in by merely thinking about things?
Mm. Well, I guess I like the idea better of this. Yeah, like you mentioned, fate, you know, there is, there are certain things that will take place. It's just, it's said and done, you know, and it's just a matter of time when you, you know, experience it. So I never thought about, did I make the bat come into my room or whatever? It was there and it was funny and it was interesting and it was like, what is going on. It was, yeah, kind of confusing, but yeah, that's probably the difference, because most of you guys would have thought about made the bat come into my room, you know?
The way the bat was flying, what does that mean?
No, it's not.
The bat landed on my Spider-Man jersey. What is he saying?
Yeah. It's really not in a negative way. I didn't want to, you know, make anybody annoyed or something. It's just you are so interested in it. Of course, you notice that when you translate it, when you read the book. You guys, it's like, it's not a hobby anymore. It's kind of a passion, you know? And for me, it's, I know it, and I heard of it, and I translated it, and it's very interesting. But it's not that it takes so much part of my life, you know?
What's kind of fascinating to me was that it's less something that we chose to do, so many of us. It was more that we were chosen, that we couldn't help but see the world this way. And then yeah, when we did find each other...
It goes past the point of just having a bat. It goes like you go to the next room and there's another damn bat, and then there's another bat, and it's another bat, and you're like, holy crap, what's up with all the damn bats?
Yeah.
I listened to a psychiatrist once give a lecture. She says that it's like it happens to like 10% of the population or whatever. They say synchronicity is real. It's, you know, and it was discovered by... psychologist, of course, and it's studied by psychologists, and they believe it has something to do with the brain, but it happens to some people a lot more than it. The things like the Sync book help individuals understand that. I mean, you have an understanding of how obsessive it can get, and the ones who are obsessed have to realize that it doesn't happen to the same degrees as it does for everyone else. But like a community being built around the book helps with that, of course.
It seems like it's come up a lot with our guests in the past that there's this idea of the invisible world. And it's that I think Mitch Horowitz wrote about it in The Occult America with the idea of the law of correspondences. You know, so there's this connection between your inner landscape and your outer landscape. And I think modern science is leading us down a path of understanding that perhaps some of our boundaries are not as solid as we think, which is fascinating that, you know, at the same time that so many of us are exploring these different mental mindscapes, that science is kind of doing something similar with material.
Which is also very difficult to translate was all this stuff about quantum physics. Is it quantum physics?
Quantum.
Quantum physics. Thanks. Yeah. Because, like, I always had the worst marks in physics. I was reading physics, and I was like, oh, my God, no. Yeah.
I'm trying to think, is David Bohm, is he German? Are you familiar with his work at all? Not.
No.
American. No, he wasn't. You've done this project. Do you find yourself exploring any of the topics now just for fun that you were introduced to in the book?
Well, I was always kind of fascinated by mythology, especially the Greek one. And, when I finished translating the book, I also did a lot of, research about Indian mythology. And also I went to Mexico for 2 months after translating the book. So I had a lot to do with the, history of Mayan and Aztec history and stuff like this, which I also did a lot of research about, because you go to the pyramids or to the ruins of the pyramids, and it's so hard to imagine that there is thousands of people living in those small parts of land, you know, and that it has once been the, you know, population, the almighty Mayans that all of a sudden disappeared, you know. I also met two guys that were very funny, two elderly guys. They were trying to tell me that the Mayans escaped with a starship and that Atlantis is real, you know? So, yeah, there are also so many theories about the Mayans and stuff, and yeah. It always depends on the people you're talking to and the amount of marijuana they already took, or mushrooms, or whatever. Yeah, old people are very. I have a high affinity to all that kind of stuff, but it's very funny. People are so nice in Mexico, so yeah.
Overall, do I understand that you really took away the idea that each essay really presented a person? That you got a sense of this is a person and they're saying this? Because for us, we would know them so intimately, we just take for granted that this is their point of view. But did you kind of get to know these people as characters?
Well,
you certainly got to know Mercury, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, my picture of him, I have to admit, you know? And I guess there's nothing that could destroy this picture again, so. Well, but I think every part, every essay of every author, of course, it was, you know, it had parts of their passion, you know? Everyone has so much passion about something, so. Yes, of course, you just notice what so many people are interested in, and of course, with everything they write, they just tell something about themselves, you know, of course. But it's not that I would say, of course, I know this guy, and I know that guy, because he wrote this or that, you know. Yeah, so it still is. And of course, you also don't know if they kind of had an alter ego or something, which they were writing from, you know? Because, I mean, I don't want to say that it is like this, but some people have, yeah, kind of an alter ego, which is researching or thinking they are whatever. I don't know. At this point, I want to say I'm sorry, Mercury. I really don't think you're so crazy.
That was 42 minutes. Thank you for sharing it with us on your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And yeah, thank you for doing this for our community, too. I mean, you really have done us a service. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I really liked to talk about with you about this. Even if I don't know if it was, I don't know, so helpful. Oh,
very helpful.
It was. It was great. It was a good time. It was a good time. To our listeners, you've been listening to Leia Metzler on SyncBook Radio, a production of thesyncbook.com. Stay tuned to SyncBook Radio for more information about the German SyncBook. For more information about the English SyncBook, our guests, to check out past shows or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at 42minutes.com. If you like the podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and Dankeschön.
Dankeschön, darling, Dankeschön. Thank you for all the joy and pain. Picture show, second balcony, was the place we'd meet. Second seat, gold Dutch treat, you were sweet. Dankeschön, darling, Dankeschön. Save those lies, darling, don't explain. What a mess, I confess, that's not all. Dankeschön.